Jill Curzon has joined me. She is my guest on the phone. So good morning to you, Jill.
Good morning, Kerry.
How lovely to be able to have the chance to chat to you this morning, and to talk about a very long career in the world of television and film. And for a lot of our lovely listeners, I'm sure it is going to be a real walk down memory lane.
I hope so.
Well, I hope so too. So, first up, I know we're calling you in London today, and you've just come back over to London from sunny Spain. I think I'm right in saying yes.
Yes, that's right. So, it's a bit too hot there at the moment.
Well,
it's cooling slightly.
Good.
It's coming.
There we are. So you're sort of on familiar ground now, then, being back in London. And as I was just saying to you on the phone when I gave you a call, here in Cardiff this morning, we've got a bit of lovely rain, because it's not as if we haven't had enough of it so far. So now, Jill, we are talking about your book that has been published by Candy Jar, which it comes around to help also mark the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who. And this was one of the films that you appeared in, I know, quite a few years ago, and probably was one of the ones that first gave you one of your major breaks.
Well, I would say that, yes. It was 1966.
Right. That's
so,
a long time ago.
Yes, I was just getting a little bit of known, I suppose.
Yes.
And had a marvellous opportunity of working with Peter Cushing, who was such a very superb
yes.
gentleman and a wonderful actor, and really a figure to be inspiring to young people, I think.
Well, I mean, back in the day, of course, I mean, he was a man of such gravitas, wasn't he? And I mean, you
yes,
know,
gravitas. That's right.
He and of course he was, as you say, Doctor Who in that particular movie that you made way back in 1966.
Yes, but several years later.
Yes.
Right, my husband and I and two friends. From Tunbridge Wells, went down to Whitstable, and we loved the oysters there.
Oh, absolutely.
So, they are supposed to be the best oysters in England, but I'm sure people will contest that. But nevertheless, they are marvellous. And, of course, it's Peter Cushing's home.
Right, yes,
and,
yes.
And long after he had gone. So I was very thrilled to go there and see his place. And then find out and go and visit. There's an Art Deco cinema, which has been turned into a restaurant there in his honour.
Right, right.
Because he lived all his life in Whitstable.
In Whitstable. It's a lovely little
and,
town. Lovely
I
little
went
town.
Into the restaurant to have a look and see. And it's really something. It's splendid because if you can imagine an old theatre,
yes.
You know, the huge high ceiling and the walls, huge room, but everything covered with photographs of things of Peter Cushing
right.
that he's done in life and everything.
Yes.
It was terribly impressive.
Fantastic.
I walked in there and I thought, oh my goodness, I wonder if they've got one of these pictures to spare me.
Mm.
And I went up to the desk and I told the lady who I was and I'd done this film.
Yes.
And I said, do you suppose by any chance you might have a spare one in the kitchen somewhere or something?
Mm.
I would love to have it, a photo. And these are all framed, I might
yes.
add. They're about a sort of a meter size picture. And she said, yes, just hang on a minute, let me have a look. She went dashing into the kitchen, came out with this huge painting and lovely frame, gold and everything.
Mm-hmm,
and I said,
yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. She said, well, you can have it. I said, what? How
well,
marvellous.
Well, that was generous. That really was
yes.
generous.
So I was so excited and I took it to my friends and we put it in the boot of the car.
Yes.
And... then I had an event for signing autographs a little while later, and I put it up for auction.
Okay.
So
yes.
Yeah. So it was you know, it was something that raised money
lovely.
For a good cause.
Oh,
and yeah, so I was very pleased about that.
So how did you make a start, Jill, in the world of acting? I mean, presumably through working in theatres to start with?
Oh, yes. I was working in Tunbridge Wells in repertory.
Yes.
Theatre, which is a very tough start because I didn't go to acting school because I was a little behind because I had been to secretarial college first.
Okay.
Because my mother said, well, she said, you want to be an actress, but you may find yourself in trouble someday or, you know, not so much work or something.
No.
And you need something to fall back on, dear.
Those were wise words. Wise words, Jill.
Yes, she was very wise about that. It did pay off, too, eventually.
Yes, yes.
And so I went to St. James's College in London, the Secretarial College, and immediately got... a little bit of work, you know,
mm-hmm.
temporary work and that sort of thing. But, yeah, so I was a bit behind all my peers, as
yes,
it were.
Yes, yes.
They were all in art, in the acting school, and I had to catch up. So the only way to do that was to go into repertory theatre, where you learn everything.
Well, absolutely.
From the ground up, you know, how the curtains work and you do... prompting and
well, yeah,
a great
grounding
for the set.
Yeah, great grounding.
And I had a small car, a little Austin Healey Sprite.
Yes,
I don't know if you know them.
I do.
And I got all the furniture for the set in the theatre in Pantiles.
Yes,
in Tunbridge Wells.
Wow.
And used to carry it back to the theatre, and it was a long day. You know, it was working. Or, you know, the lines, I was reading the lines in the back for people, you know, if they forgot their
yes,
lines.
Yes, yes.
And then you had to work out how the theatre management works. And, you know, it was a good grounding.
Well,
actually.
Absolutely that. So what was it then that you would look back on now and say, well, my first big opportunity to step up then from the theatre into the world of film? I mean, how did that come about?
Well, I think that... once I had the luck of stepping into the TV, which was with David Croft,
right?
Who they had what they call an in-house, the BBC. This is an in-house little test for floor managers to become possible directors.
It's okay,
and so I didn't get paid, and I was working with a guy from. Think of it in a minute.
No, well, never mind. But I mean, that was the step up through
into TV. We
weren't paid,
and we had to choose them.
Yes,
and it was a 20-minute film, and from that, David Croft saw it and said, "Oh, I want her for Hugh and I."
Right,
she's the one.
Okay,
and so that was a big start in television.
And of course, David Croft, a man who produced and wrote so much stuff for television over the years.
Dad's Army and
indeed.
All.
Oh, indeed.
He was marvellous.
Yes, yes.
And he was so funny because we were doing comedy, and at the end of the week we had the crew come in who was going to do it in the theatre.
Yes.
And David would say, well, if they laugh, then we've got a show.
Absolutely.
The technicians laugh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That. No, and I mean, that is very true. So wonderful that he sort of saw something in you, obviously, that he thought, there is something there that I think we can work with.
Yes, that's right. And he's marvellous.
Yes.
And he never used to laugh out loud. He used to just shake. And you know, he knew he was enjoying it.
Fair enough. So then, fine, the opportunity came to do some stuff on TV in the 60s. So again, that was... I mean, it was presumably something that you always wondered, could you make the step up to working in films as well, I would imagine?
Yeah. It just really... happened. You know, it just gravitated. It seemed like a natural thing to do.
Yes, yes, yes. And of course, there's so much luck involved as well, isn't there?
In this profession, being in the right place at the right time.
Exactly that. So, yeah. What was your first taster then in the world of film? Was it actually the Doctor Who film that we've mentioned, or had you done something before that?
No, I did a film called Smokescreen.
Yes.
Black and white.
Right.
I haven't got my list of credits.
Well, no, I don't worry. I mean, because it's a very long list, and I mean, we can make that point to our lovely listeners that if they do look you up on Wikipedia, they will find plenty of stuff about you. But clearly, the Doctor Who film, I mean, in those days, I mean, I suppose it was logical for the TV series to do a film spin-off. So what was it like?
Yes.
What was it like working with those Daleks?
Oh, well, it was very interesting. It was marvellous. Gordon Fleming was such a good director. He had the vision, and he worked, you know, with the producer. And
yes.
He was marvellous. And it was such an interesting thing because I hadn't studied it and I didn't know how they worked, but I soon found out.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes. And the point is, Jill, of course, what we've got to remind people of in this modern age, of course, special effects can be added or taken away at the whim of you know, the technicians. But back in the day, obviously, so much of it just had to be done in the good old-fashioned way, didn't it?
Yes. That's very true. That's very true. And a lot of it, particularly in a movie like that, was very experimental.
Yes, yes, indeed. So you must have felt that you were absolutely all on the start of a journey. And, I mean, who would have ever guessed where it would take you? I mean, particularly here we are now, 60 years with Doctor Who, certainly. So tell us a little bit about the part that you played in the film. Because you were the niece, weren't you, I think? Was it the niece of Doctor Who?
Yes, the Doctor's niece.
Right, yeah, yes.
We were all, he was directing us, you know, as a family.
Yeah.
How to beat them? What could we do? How can we get rid of them?
Well, absolutely. Daleks? And obviously, for a lot of people of a certain age, the Daleks were absolutely the sort of the foe that they loved to hate, weren't they? Because that high-pitched sort of screaming voice that they had and the fact that, you know, there was such a sense of menace to them.
Yes, absolutely. They were unknown, and it was a mystery. And until you worked with them, you didn't really know how it worked.
How it worked, no.
There was a man inside. And then they have the accident when it went rolling down and caught fire.
Oh, dear.
We had a job to get the guy out, but he was okay.
My goodness me. So,
then when one of the stuntmen fell through the canvas.
Right.
That was pretty frightening. He broke his ankle.
Goodness me. So, I mean, these were all sort of real life dramas that were taking place within a film. But I mean, you must have felt at the end of it, well, you know, what a learning experience that was. And I mean, obviously then you went on to appear in other films, other TV series. And one of the ones that was a real favourite of mine when I was a youngster was The Champions.
Ah, yes. I had a lovely part in that. I played an air hostess.
Right, right.
And it wasn't long enough for me.
No.
I could have done... It was a very, very nice part.
And I do remember, it was Alexandra Bastida, wasn't it?
Yes, beautiful girl.
She was a beauty, really, back in the day.
Yes, she was, yes.
And
very nice.
It was such a clever idea for a series. And I mean, as I say, me as a, what would I have been? I don't know, 9, 10, 11 years of age, whatever. It was just great fun. And that whole sort of science fiction sort of vibe to it all, again, just made it ideal for kids of my sort of age.
Yes, that's right.
And so you went on then to also appear alongside some other very, very famous people, including Roger Moore, because you were also in The Saint too.
Yes, I really loved that. it was the first opportunity that he had had as an aspiring director.
Mm-hmm.
And he directed the one that I was in.
Okay, yes.
And I have to say, I think he would have made a really brilliant director.
If he hadn't then also been a really, really fine actor. And
what a
career he had. So
absolutely.
Again, we can...
And he was such a nice person. We were really good friends. He was just a really nice person, and he had a lovely family, and his son and two sons. And Deborah, his daughter. And then he met that they weren't so happy with his Italian wife. She coached me actually in the show.
Okay.
She was sitting in the studio and she was in one corner, and I was supposed to be this Maria Carigliano. And I was Italiano.
Ah, yes.
And so she had to help me with my Italian accent and try to forget the Spanish, you know, which is quite close.
Yeah, yes.
So I used to go in one corner and she would sort of brush me up on things, and then another corner where Roger would tell me exactly how he wanted it.
I see, you know? I see. I mean...
So it was fun.
And that's...
But we became great friends.
Well, that's fabulous, isn't
America.
It? Yeah,
yeah.
Isn't that fabulous? And of course, as we said, it's those sorts of things, those friendships that you make, which in many cases, of course, would last for a lifetime.
Yes, that's right. And people in the business, you know, you could compare and then say, well, what... Is so and so okay? How are they to work with? And you know, there's lots of
the
that
great
going,
sort of the grapevine,
which
yes,
is helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let me just talk about London then, the swinging '60s as it was known. And I mean, was it really as much fun as it looks as though it was?
Absolutely,
it was.
Absolutely, but you know, it really was because we had been so kept up during the war. I was born the year before the outbreak of war,
okay.
1938. And so I grew up with everything restricted, everything
yes.
was rationed. Only young children could have a special orange juice every month.
Right, yeah, yes.
And things like that. And then, of course, the sweets, that was all rationed.
Mm,
and so
mm.
my mother had a great idea. She would buy out what we were allowed. With crunchy bars and Mars bars and things like that. And she would put them in a safe, which was nothing more than a biscuit tin.
Right.
Then we would, when it was full at the end of the month, we would have midnight feast.
Oh,
you know?
Lovely, lovely. But I mean,
that was fun.
But then, as we said, the 60s sort of brought a sort of a bit of a new dawn,
well,
didn't they, really?
It was great, yes. I was just in my early 20s and... It was like the world came alive.
Yes,
and
yes.
everybody was enjoying things, simple things, but things we had been, you know, not able to do.
No, absolutely.
And
so
it was a huge age of growth of talent of
yes.
Artists and people making clothes and. You know,
and
Mary Quant.
Well, that's
all
it.
These things.
And you were right. Yeah. You were right in the middle of it all, there, really,
and
weren't
you?
It was
so exciting, and the Beatles.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
A wonderful,
just a marvelous, marvelous
no,
time.
I mean, a wonderful
Americans
time.
Americans were in town, and they were coming and interviewing us, and there was freedom there, but there was huge creativity as well.
Yes, yes. So
Mary Quant.
So you moved on through and working with so many other people, and I mean, as we said, it's a bit
yes.
like a who's who. We mentioned earlier to our lovely listeners people like Morecambe and Wise and Patrick McGoohan
yes.
and also Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
They were super friends. That was when I was in Hampstead. Yeah, they're very nice, both of them.
So how did you come by the idea then of, I know that you were a great one for keeping a diary, so you thought, I need to tell my story, and Candy Jar came along and were able to help.
Yes, yes. I really knew I wanted to do it so much.
Yes. So how long?
I was happily married then.
Yeah.
Last, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So how long did it? How long did it take you then to sort of pass over the diaries and so on and the things that you wanted to say to people? So what I'm trying to say is how long did it take to get the book to where it is now?
Well. It sounds a long time, really, but it was about like 10 years from
right.
the very start.
Yes.
Of writing things and seriously writing the last three years.
Indeed. And so
yes.
it's going to be a book, I'm sure, that is going to be of great interest to people who are keen on knowing about the Doctor Who aspects.
About that era too,
but
yes.
also about the era as well.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm sure there are many, many stories in there, but inevitably, Jill, yeah. we're sort of running out of time for our little chat today.
Are we really?
We
oh,
are.
Wow.
No, we are, I'm afraid. So what we'll have to do, I think, is we'll have to see if we can get you back on the phone again at another time to talk about some of the other aspects of your work and your career.
Thank you.
That would be lovely.
That would be lovely, Gary.
Wouldn't it? But so just to sum up, though, the book is called Jill Curzon, 2023 AD, My Eventful Life. And so
yes.
it takes you through your entire career, I assume, and pretty much
yes.
right up to date.
Yes. That's very true,
and lots of twists and turns.
It ended with my poor. Well, yeah, it was our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to sort of have an up note.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Because that was the most exciting thing. But now I've got another book that I want to write about my life with Leo.
Well, there we are then. So definitely,
yes,
we need to talk further.
He was a Finn, and there's lots of adventures and. Yeah.
Well,
so maybe if I'm still here, I might get that done.
No, well, that's good to hear. Well, Jill, listen, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning. As I say, I'm sorry that time has beaten us, as it always does. But do enjoy the rest of your day. And hopefully we can have a further chat with you maybe at some time in the future to talk about so many of the other things that clearly you still have to chat about.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you so much.
No, that would
I'm
be
really honoured.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jill, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
That's okay.
Thank you Good. Very much. Thank you for joining us.